Here's the plan, okay? So for Elul, like I said, Shmuel David is going to focus only on halachot dealing with Shana Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and I will also do some topics related to that as soon as we finish introduction, okay? But our basic goal for this track is to A, cover a certain number of sugyot, a certain number of topics in halacha, but B, to understand how you research a topic yourself that you don't know much about, okay? Not something super complicated, right? Not like some modern shaila that takes a million, that is like, you have to spend hours trying to figure out the technology behind it and you don't even know where to start, right? That's a whole different art, and maybe later in the year we'll deal with that, but not in the first few months of yeshiva. That's not where we are. But take a basic halachic issue and to be able to figure out, assuming you don't know Shas by heart, which maybe you do, I don't know. Assuming you don't yet know Shas by heart, how you find the basic sources from the Gemara, tracing down to the basic source of Allah. Okay, that's our goal, is to give you those tools. Understood? That's the goal. Okay. So for the first few classes, we'll see how long it takes. With me at least, what we're gonna do is introduction. Okay? Introduction to the basic books and the basic methodology of how you learn halacha. Okay? So a lot of this is gonna be just right. Okay? Yeah, you with me? Fine. So probably the best way, if you don't know a sugya well in advance, to at least get your feet wet is going to be to use, and this is how we're going to really organize ourselves, is going to be to use the Beit Yosef.
What is
Okay?
that?
That's what I'm about to do. Okay? So as some of you at least have heard, I care very much about biography, so let's take a minute and do this. Okay? So the first, there were some like minor attempts at halachic codification in the Gaonic period. The first major attempt at halachic codification was, right, because the Gemara is not written in code, was Mishneh Torah, was the Rambam, right? So what years are that?
11th century,
1200.
Yeah, so the Rambam is born 1140, he dies 1204, 1205, not clear exactly, right? So he writes the Mishneh Torah, 982 prakim, organizes Kol HaTorah Kula, wonderful, okay? The next major attempt, and again, there are other attempts, the next major attempt that is still used today, how about that? As such, took a different approach and organized not all of halacha, but organized practical halacha. Okay, because the Rambam includes kachim and tarot, right? Karbanot issues and all of that, which is not relevant now, but that didn't matter. The Rambam was organizing all of Torah. Okay? But Rabbi Yaakov Bal HaTurim, who is Rabbi Yaakov Bal HaTurim? He wrote the Arbaturim. His name is Yaakov. His father's name is Asher. His father is also known as Rabbeinu Asher, also known by the acronym, the Rush. Very good. Now, who's the Rush? Who is the Bal HaTurim? When did they live? Let's see what you guys know. You can use your phone if you can get any reception. You'll remember more. Yes, I'm letting you pull out your phone, but trust me, you'll remember it better, but this is important. So we're going to look at the Torah, right? So obviously there are other attempts at codes, but what we're going to focus on really here is the Torah and Shulchan Aruch.
The Shulchan Aruch
So
was
who is so the Rosh is who? Rabbeinu Asher, when does he live?
1500.
What?
I looked it up and came up with Rashi.
Okay, well, Rashi is a different person. He is
Oh,
also very
no.
important. Yes. Isaacides. Yes, Isaacides.
Yaakov
Thank you.
ben Asher, it was born in 12.
Okay, wait, so before we get to Yaakov ben Asher, his father, as long as we're on it. Hello.
What? Grandson, she was in care.
So Rabbeinu Asher, yeah, who is he? What? Ben Yechiel, very good.
He was born in 1250.
Who are you on, the Rush or Rabbi Yaakov, the Tour?
Asher ben Yechiel.
Okay, good. Yeah, so he's born when?
1250
in Germany, and he dies in 1327
1327
in Toledo, in Spain, right? Now, why is this important? So, in the medieval period, right, we very broadly speaking, and this is an oversimplification, but we divide there's the Ashkenazic communities, which include northern France and Germany, right? And then the Sephardic communities, which include, right, well, so it's a little bit more complicated, but when people, you're thinking a lot of Sephardim, sometimes you're talking about Christian Spain, and sometimes you're talking about Muslim Spain, and right, so Christian Spain is like the Ramban is in Christian Spain, and the Ritva is in Christian Spain. But like in the Islamic world, so right, the Rambam is obviously in the Islamic world in Egypt, but Rabbi Zakaro is going to be in Israel and people who are in Istanbul, right? That's more the Muslim world. Fine. Okay. But the Rush is one of the last of the major figures in Ashkenaz before disaster hits in Ashkenaz. And he flees, right? There's tremendous persecution. The Rush. So the Rush starts off, he's a student of the Balei Tosfot, right? His Rebbe is the last really major figure in Germany, right? Who is the Maharam Rotenberg, mayor of Rothenburg, okay? The Rush studies with him. He has a tremendous amount of traditions from the Balei Tosfot and Ashkenaz, but there's a lot of persecution in Germany, so he flees to Spain, okay? Which means that the Rush has the traditions of Ashkenaz, but he also, right, towards the end of his life, is brought into contact with the world of Sfarad, okay? So this is important. His son, right, Rav Yaakov Bal HaTurim, right, called the Bal HaTurim because he writes the Arba Turim, decides to codify a halacha into a practical work. So he divides halacha into four sections. What are the four sections of the Torah? Orachayim. Orachayim, Yoredeya, Choshen Mishpat, and Evan Ezer. Okay? So what are these? What are these four? Okay, sorry. Who had the Torah's ears? Right, who looked up the Torah?
I did.
Good. So Yaakov Bal HaTurim, right? So he's already in Spain, but he will have a lot of Ashkenazi traditions through his father, right? Through the Rush, yeah. So years.
He was born in 1269 and he died in 1343. He was born in Cologne. Wow. He died in 1343.
His father was 19. I didn't quite put that together. Okay, his father was 19 when he had him, apparently. So fine.
It was that time period.
I understand. I get it. Yeah, I just didn't put it together. Okay. No, it's not that shocking. Okay, so the Torah organizes halacha into four practical divisions rather than 14 like the Rambam. Yes, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher Bal HaTurim. Evan HaEzer. Not the Ibn Ezra, Evan HaEzer.
Okay?
So, these four halakim are what? What does Arachayim deal with?
Daily
halacha, right? So that includes tefillah, that includes brachot, Kriyat Torah, Shabbat, Iruvin, Chagim, all that's in Or Chaim. Okay? First Chelek. Second Chelek is Yoredeya, which is? Or Yoredeya, what is it? It's Isur V'Heter, it's ritual law. So it includes Hilchot Kashrut, right?
What's it called again?
What? Yoredeya, right? Like this, Yoredeya. Right, this is a volume of Yoredeya, right? Yoredeya. So he writes, right, and this is ritual law. So it's right, it's shchita melicha, all the laws of kashrut, right? So from shchita, salting through bugs and basar b'chalav and taruvot and right mixtures and all that. Okay, but it's also hilchot staka, it's hilchot nida, right? Hilchot ribit, right? Usury laws. What? No.
Okay.
Nida, even though we think of it as a marriage law, it's not really. It's really a ritual law, right? Which happens to obviously affect marriage, but that's not where it goes. It goes in Yoredeya. Avelut is one of the major topics, right? Avelut is depending on whether you start at Shin Lamed Hey or Shin Mem, right? You have starting with like Bikur Cholim, which is the lead up to death in Yoredeya. So Shin Lamed Hey, if you start at Bikur Cholim, right, until the end of Yoredeya and Tav Gimel, right, is Avelut, so good, right? A very large percentage of it is Avelut, right? That's Yoredeya. Choshen Mishpat.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
No, that, we'll get there. That's Evan Ezer. Okay, fine. We'll do Evan Ezer first. Evan Ezer is marriage law. It's very short, only 178 simanim, right? It's marriage, divorce, ketubot, right? Sota, right? Infidelity, right? Infidelity laws. And then Choshen Mishpat, which is monetary. Okay, the laws of judges, the laws of Torah, right? Torah, law, damages, all that. Okay, those are the four, right? Those are the four halakim of the Torah. Good? Comes the 16th century, okay? And then something magical happens in the 16th century. two major things happened in the 16th century that are very important, that shake the world in general and the Jewish world in particular. One is technological and one is political.
Printing press is technological.
Technological is the printing press, right? And then what is the major political event that defines Jewry for about a century?
Black.
No. I'll give you a hint at the end of the 15th century, but that's going to affect primarily the 16th. The expulsion. Yeah. Right, the Spanish expulsion, 1492, right? So Jews are everywhere, right? Jews are, I think, post-Holocaust, right? Jews are uprooted from hundreds of years of tradition, or thrown into the world, right? Complete chaos, right? Combine that with the fact that there's a new technology that they can use to help organize material, right? The printing press. So in the 16th century, you have several attempts to reorganize halakha to respond to the chaos of the 16th century. Okay?
So this is the beginning of, we call it the Achronic period.
Yes. This is, right, most people when they're talking the Achronic period are talking somewhere around here. Right, like this is, right, these lines are not met, are not, you know, set in stone. So some people will draw it a little bit earlier, a little later, but sometime around this century, yes.
If you had to say what divides Rishonim from Achronim, you would say Inquisition and printing press.
Some people would do that. Meaning, look, Professor Jeffrey Wolf argues that the Achronic period starts with Iran, right? Much earlier. And his reason is that a better way of looking at Rishonim and Achronim is not sort of when does codification start and end, but when do commentaries on the Gemara stop commenting on the Gemara and start commenting on the Rishonim who commented on the Gemara, right? Because, right, it's just a self-perception issue. And the Ran already starts not just commenting on the Gemara, but he starts writing super commentaries on the earlier commentaries. Right, which indicates, right, a sort of, right, so we could divide it every one. But yes, most people will divide the Rishonic and Achronic period sometime around the turn of the 16th century, right, more or less. There are a few major attempts to organize halacha at the time, okay? Two happen simultaneously and take similar approaches, and one happens around the same time but does something different, okay? So, Rabbi Yosef Karo is living in where?
Israel.
Where in Israel?
Tzfat.
Tzfat, very good. Right, Rabbi Yosef Karo is living in Tzfat. You guys know years. What? We just said that, 16th century. Yeah, but he's born the end, right, in 1488 in Spain. But yeah, most of his life he lives in Tzfat until 1575, okay? Fascinating figure. Very, very, very important figure. He gets smicha, real smicha, in one of the most interesting historical situations that we've ever had, right? Rabbi Yosef Karo, right? So Rabbi Yosef Karo is living there. Now what happens, right?
How did he get real?
Good. So, in the middle of the 16th century, there is a major Talmud Chacham in Tzfat, Mari Beirav, who decides that the time has come to bring back real smicha, right? Which comes directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. It allows you to judge capital crimes, to give malkut, right? It allows you to convene a real Beit Din. The problem with it is that you need real smicha needs ish mi pi ish, right?
From
Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Rambam suggests that there is a different way of doing that, and that is to convene all the rabbis of Israel. And if all the rabbis of Israel agree, they can recreate smicha. So the Mari Beirav decides that he's going to convene such a Beit Din and recreate smicha. Okay? Now, it turns into a wild controversy, right? Because he sends a letter to the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim, and the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim say, no, we're not getting involved in this. And they then had a machloka whether it worked, because Mari Beirav understood the Rambam to mean that Rove doesn't mean, that everyone doesn't mean everyone, Rubo Kikulo, the majority counts as everybody. And therefore, even if the Maral Bach and Rav Yaakov Chazan, who are the two major poskim in Yerushalayim, disagree, doesn't matter because most of the rabbis live in Tzvat, and they're with the Mari Beirav, and therefore they can recreate Smicha. Okay? Mar Albach and the Rock of Chazan saying, no, 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 you need all rabbis. Right?
The entire world.
No, in Israel. All the rabbis in Israel.
Okay, every single rabbi in Israel.
Yes, that's how they understand it. And therefore, they say that since we don't agree with you, your smicha doesn't work.
So a random okay? rabbi could just basically ruin the entire thing.
Well, that was the argument of Mar Elbach and Rabbi Yaakov Chazan, yes. And Mari Beirav did not agree, and it got very, very, very vicious. Besides for like rabbinic polemics, they also like told on each other the government and ended up driving them out, you know, getting driven out of the country and not quite a mess. But one of the people that gets smicha during this process is Rabbi Yosef Karo, and therefore there is a he's given real smicha, which is so Svardim sometimes will claim that Maran, which is his nickname, right, which just means our master, and will sometimes say that Maran stands for Moreno Rabbeinu Nismach, right, our master, our teacher, who got smicha, right. So Yosef Karo is the major, major posek in Tzvat, right? He is massive, massive Talmud Chacham, halachist and Kabbalist, right? And therefore, he writes several very important works, okay? He writes a commentary on the Rambam, known as the Kesef Mishnah, okay? He writes a very interesting sefer called Magid Misharim, which is... What, Rabbi Yosef Karo? He writes a commentary on the Rambam. On the Rambam. If you open a Rambam, you'll see Kesef Mishnah has a standard commentary. That's Rabbi Yosef Karo. He writes the Magid Misharim, which is a record of his nightly chavruta with an angel known as the Magid. He said he had a nightly chavruta with an angel, and he collects these conversations with the angel into a book called Magid Misharim. I don't know what you want from me. He has Tshuvot, two volumes of Tshuvot, Tshuvot Beit Yosef and Tshuvot Avkat Rochel. But his two most important works are a commentary that he writes on the Torah, which is not really a commentary on the Torah as much as it is using the Torah to organize all of halacha, and that is what you have here, which is the Beit Yosef. Okay? So if you open up any Torah, right, in the middle here you have the Torah, right, the comments of the Torah, and then on the inner column you have the Beit Yosef, right, and then who we mentioned before, the Bach, right, you have the outer column, Rav Yoel Sirkis, okay, who's living in Poland. And at any rate, the Bach writes more of an actual commentary on the Torah. Basically, it is using the Torah to organize halacha. Okay. Simultaneously, there is a major posek living in Krakow. Moshe Israelis, the Rama. Okay. He writes also similarly an encyclopedic work of halacha organized on the Torah known as the Darkei Moshe, now known as the Darkei Moshe Ha'aruch, which means the long version, right? Now, what happens, right? You have it in the back here, right? In the newer Torahs, you have it in this is the Shachar. Okay. Here, right? You see, it's basically the same length as Beit Yosef, right? See how long it is on every sif, right? However, he hears that the Rabbi Yosef Karo is writing this magnum opus, and he decides that rather than write a parallel Perush, what he's going to do is he's going to write an addendum to the Beit Yosef, right? He's going to build off the Beit Yosef and only comment when he disagrees and bring in Ashkenazi customs, and that's the Darkei Moshe Katzar. So on a standard page of the Torah, right, you'll have the Darkei Moshe Katzar, right? You see it? Right? Just like, it's a line or two, maybe a few paragraphs, that's it. Okay, and then you have two other commentaries on the standard page of the Torah, and that is the Drisha and the Prisha, who are by two brothers, okay? as you can see, right? Rabbi Yosef Maya and Rabbi Michal Shimon Maya.
They
okay?
wrote the
Drisha and the Prisha, which is this on the bottom.
Like where they disagree.
Right, where they have, right? So that's, but, okay? Now, we'll, then they both, right? This is the encyclopedic work, okay? Then Rabbi Yosef Karo writes a handbook, right? A handbook, which is the summary of his conclusions, and that is, right, Shulchan Aruch, right, also divided into the same four halakim. The Rama writes the mapa, right, the tablecloth, because, again, there's the Shulchan Aruch, and he's just adding, so he adds a tablecloth, the mapa, right, or the haga, that right, the hagahot, right, his additions, and that is going to be, right, in a lot of printing, it'll be like in Rashi script, right, in the middle of Shulchan Aruch, right, like there. What? Whoa, you are jumping like crazy. Fine. Now, what is the common denominator between Rabbi Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Isserles? So they're major poskim, and in terms of approach to psak, what do they agree on? That what? Well, codification, right? They think this is a good idea.
The four pillars.
Just in general, the idea of codification is a good idea,
yeah,
right? Good. So there is, at that point, that's the voice that wins. However, there is a minority voice at the time, a cousin of the Rama, Rav Shlomo Luria, who writes the Yamshel Shlomo. And the Yamshel Shlomo says, right, as we'll see in a minute, Rabbi Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Isserles disagree a little bit in how you're supposed to paskin, but they fundamentally agree that a code is a good idea. The question of how you balance factors and stuff like that is a little bit different, but they agree that a code is a good idea. Yes? Rav Shlomo Luria says, under no circumstances, this is insane. How do you paskin halacha? From the Gemara. Gemara, you understand the sugya, that's it. What is this code? Who are you to bind me? Right, you learn the sugya. That's how you paskin halacha. This is crazy. I hate all codes. And you'll say, I, the Rambam. And what will he tell you?
He was wrong too.
And he was wrong too, right? His heroes are not the Rambam. Who is his hero? Or who are his heroes?
Yeah.
No. I mean, yes, but post-Talmudic. The Balei HaTosfot. The Balei HaTosfot is heroes. Why? Because what do the Balei HaTosfot do? They make the Gemara easier to understand by bringing all seeming contradictions in conversation with each other and resolving it so that instead of reading Masechet Masechet, right, all of Shas is one big ball, right? Because they connect all the different strands and they allow you to understand how they speak to each other so you can come to practical conclusions, right? So his hero, now, admittedly, in the 16th century, the idea of codification wins out, right? Everyone is obsessed with codification. Yes? Right? Everyone is obsessed with codification. That becomes cemented in the Jewish consciousness because it's not just that now you have two major poskim, Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Rama on the same page, but every great posek for the next 100+ years gets in on the action, right? And writes a commentary or sort of a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, or at least shares his halachic opinion. But surrounding Shulchan Aruch, right, which gives you several hundred years worth of, exactly, all on one page, right, which makes it very, very convenient. So, who are the major, right, again, like I said, I'm doing introduction, right, this is, for the first few days, we're just going to get our bearing, because halacha is a little bit complicated, we're just get bearing, okay? So, who are the major post-confused, open up a page of Shulchan Aruch? So, let's go chronologically here. So if you want to look first, right after the Mechaber and the Rama, right? So Rabbi Yosef Karo sometimes just called the Mechaber, the author, okay? So if I say Mechaber, that's what I mean, Rabbi Yosef Karo, okay? So the Rama has a student, Mamur Chayafe, writes the Lavush, but that's a commentary that's not written on the page of Shulchan Aruch, right? But who are the people that if you just are on the page of Shulchan Aruch, who do you have? So in Aruch Hayim, the major two are the Magen Avraham, okay, Rav Avram Gombiner, okay? So you see on, see the outer, margin. You have, yeah. Yeah, so you have the Magen Avraham, right? Rav Avraham Gombiner. So he is from, 1 second, get you exact years. His exact years are 1637 to 1683 in Poland, in Gombin, Poland. Okay. So this is the major, right? Right. He's the major commentary on Or Chaim. And on the inner margin, you have the Taz. Now, by the way, the Magen Avraham was a little bit of a controversial book. Mostly the title. Why was the title controversial?
Because Avraham.
Not Avraham. Avraham, no big deal. It's because Magen Avraham is God. It's a bit of a, right? He called himself God, right? You understand that that's a little bit controversial. But the Avraham part was fine. It was the Magen Avraham part that got people a little bit. So the Taz, the Turei Zahav is who? So this is Reb David Halevi Segal, right? Or Segal. In general, if you see the name Segal, there's a high chance that the person is a Levi. Because Segal is a traditional Levi name, right? Because it is Rashi Tevot.
Like famous actor Steven
Segal. So why is Segal a Levi name? It's Rashi Tevot for Sgan LaKohanim, right? Assistant to the Kohanim. That's what Segal is. Okay. So he lives in Ludmir in Poland also. Okay. So he also writes a commentary. He's a little bit earlier, right? So 1586, right? You're talking a little bit earlier. Then you have the Machted HaShekel, was a super commentary on them. A little bit, so then later on our standard page of Shulchan Aruch, you'll have the Vilna Gaon. Now, the Vilna Gaon, as we'll see, is actually methodologically much more similar to Shlomo Luria, to Marshal, where he does go back to the Gemaras. Okay, but he writes a brief commentary in Shulchan Aruch, the Be'er HaGra, right? What's the Gra's name? When does he live?
He's a contemporary of George Washington.
Yes, thank you. He's a contemporary of George Washington. Very good, right? He's living in the mid-18th century. And his name is Eliyahu Kramer, Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer, right? Lives in Vilna. Chachmat Shlomo, you have Rav Shlomo Kluger. Prima Gadim is also very, very important. Prima Gadim writes two commentaries, Eshel Avraham, which is a commentary on the Magen Avraham. And then, right, the Mishpatzot Zahav, which is a parish on the Taz. On the Turei Zahav, so Mishpatzot Zahav, right? So that is, right, so you have him. So these are the major commentaries that you will find on the page of a standard Shulchan Aruch. Okay, Prima Gadim, you're talking 18th century, 1727, okay? So that is what you will have. You have a Haggadah Rabbi Akiva Eiger, right? You have some others, right? You'll have some in the back, but that's like the standard page. That's an Or HaChaim. If you go to Yoredeya, or you look at Choshen Mishpat, instead of Magen Avraham, you will have another very, very important posek, probably even more important for Psak than any of the others, and that is the Shach, right? The Shach, who is Rav Shabtai HaKohen Rappaport, right? And Ad Hayom, if you find Rappaports, most of them are descendants of the Shach, and there, which is very important because the Shach was a Kohen Miuchas, right? A Kohen who could trace his lineage back to Aaron HaKohen. So Rappaports are a very important family because some people are very, very insistent that when they do Kohanic things like Pidyon HaBen, that they find a Rappaport.
Is it a very big family?
It's a decent sized family, yeah. Like, it's not like there are no Rappaports around. Yeah. And many of them are named, not just Rappaport, but like there's one near me, his name is Shabtai HaKohen Rappaport, right? He has the exact same name as his great-great-great-grandfather, what? I don't live in Modin, I live in Efrat. The Shach is also, is 17th century, right? 1621 to 1662. Mildly terrifying. He writes his Perush on Shulchan Aruch, which is more in depth and longer than pretty much anyone else's. But he writes it when he's like your age, I mean, he dies when he's, you know, 41, right? He writes this monstrous commentary when he's a teenager, while running away from, while running away from, like, anti-Semitic attacks and whatever. So, like, on the road, he's writing this this unbelievable commentary. So this is when Shulchan Aruch becomes cemented in the mind is like the book, right? Because over the course of like 200 years, all these very major figures write commentaries. So that means that you open up a page of Shulchan Aruch and you have access not just to Yosef Karo, Moshe Israelis, but to the Shach, to the Taz, Magen Avraham, etc. Okay? On Or Chaim specifically, right, there is a major work written in the late 19th, early 20th century, which is, since you keep jumping to him, you're just off by four centuries. Which is the Mishnah Brura, which is written by Rav Meir Kagan, right? What?
Kagan or Kagan?
Kagan. Okay. Kagan. Kagan. I think. The Chofetz Chaim. But the Yisrael Meir Kagan writes the Mishnah Brura, right? And the Mishnah Brura is divided really into three different books, right? Do we have a Mishnah Brura here? We should, right? Now, I do want you to understand, people do exactly what Zeriker just did and say, oh, Mr. Brura, right? Like, he's like the Magen Avraham. No, Magen Avraham is from the 17th century. Mr. Brura is basically a modern posek, very modern, okay?
He's more modern, you get Pinnei Halakha.
Yes, but the Mishnah Brura is modern enough that he has an obituary in the New York Times, okay? We're not talking that long ago. He dies in the 1930s. He actually doesn't, amazingly. That's one of the problems with Mishnah Brura, as Rav Lichtenstein once pointed out to me, is that he's a modern posek who writes as if he lives in the 16th century, right? He ignores electricity in the entire book, doesn't mention it once. It's actually a mind-boggling thing that he doesn't do that. He does. He dies in the 1930s. I know people who went to him when he was alive. He had electricity.
You can see a film recording of him walking.
Yes. Okay. 1930s. There was electricity in the 1930s. No. Stop.
No, but you knew that it would have existed.
He did.
No.
Oh, Gavald, stop. Stop. No, he wasn't. Oh, he fazed me. Yes. Okay. Stop. Yes. So anyway, so he dies in 1830. He is born in 1839. He dies in 1933. Okay. And he writes the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura is divided into three different books. Three different books, but we have none of them here. Right? Somewhere we have the Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura is divided into three books, okay? There is the Mishnah Brura, there's the Be'er Halacha, and the Shaar Tzion. Okay? A Shaar Tzion is mostly the sources for the Mishnah Brura and the Be'er Halacha. There's sometimes he does make halacha comments there. The main two halachic parts of the book are the Mishnah Brura and the Be'er Halacha. What's the difference? So the Mishnah Brura is mostly a compendium of earlier sources, right, of the Achronim. Right, and the Be'er Halacha is his independent analysis of the issue, right? And sometimes they come to the same conclusion, sometimes they don't. Sometimes he's more machmir one, sometimes more machmir in the other. Okay, this becomes a very, very important work, especially in the late 20th century. In the early 20th century, not as much. It was important, but it gains different status. And nowadays, you'll hear a lot of people saying that Mishnah Brura is the Pasuk Acharon, and you always have to pasuk the Mishnah Brura, but he becomes very important. There is a contemporary of his who writes another major halachic work, some before Mishnah Brura and some after, because he writes a lot more, right? So parts of it are published earlier, some parts of it are published later, known as the Aruch HaShulchan, written by Rav Chiel. No, the Aruch HaShulchan, written by Rav Chiel Michal Epstein. Okay? Unlike the Mishnah Brura only writes on Aruch Chaim, right? The Aruch HaShulchan writes on all four Chelkei Shulchan Aruch and Kadshim, Zrayim, and Tarot in Aruch HaShulchan HaAtid. Okay? He is for a long time, and there's still many poskim who prefer the Arachat Shulchan over the Mishnah Berurah, for different reasons. So, for example, Rav Henkin, who was the posek in America before Moshe Feinstein, is quoted as having said that he preferred the Arachat Shulchan to the Mishnah Berurah for three reasons. One was that the Arachat Shulchan was a shul rabbi, and like an actual leader of a community, so we reflected the practice in a way the Mishnah Berurah did not. The second was that the Arachat Shulchan writes on all of Shulchan Aruch, which the Mishnah Berurah does not. And the third is he just claims the Arachat Shulchan is smarter. The first two are clearly, obviously, true, right? He was a community leader and he wrote all of Shulchan Aruch. Whether he's smarter or not, I have no idea.
He's more relatable.
He said smarter. He has three reasons. He says mechadad de'tvei.
I'd say the smarter could be interpreted as him saying more relatable.
Yeah, no, he doesn't say that.
Wait, did Arachat Shulchan come after Mishnah?
No.
Or like how many years before
that? No. They are contemporaries. But he writes more, so some of it is published before, some published after. Yes.
So why are the Mishnah Berurah 3 months ago? So they
Mishnah Berurah, Ber Halacha, and Shaar
Tzion. Oh, okay.
The Arachat Shulchan will follow the Siman in Shulchan Aruch, meaning if you look at the top number in Shulchan Aruch, he'll have the same, but he doesn't write on Shulchan Aruch. He writes essays on each Halacha. The benefit is that he will give you the basic sugya, starting with the Gemara, going through the Rishonim, and then we'll give you Halacha.
And what's the Shaar Tzion?
Is the sources. Shaar Tzion, right? Tzionim are like references. Okay?
And Mishnah Berurah is on Shulchan Aruch.
And Mishnah Berurah, Ber Halacha, and Shaar Tzion, that's on Shulchan Aruch, yes. Okay? It's three parts to one book. Like you open up a page of Mishnah Berurah, they're all on the page, right? Mishnah Berurah on one side, Ber Halacha on the other side, Shaar Tzion on the bottom.
Wait, is Shulchan Aruch the Torah?
Shulchan Aruch is Rosh Karo, right? So let's review what we said. I know there's a lot of information. Okay, so, 13th century is Yaakov Balaturim writes the four Halakim of Shulchan Aruch. Orachaim Yardea, Choshen Mishpat Eben Ezer. Orachaim is daily life. Yardea is ritual law. Choshen Mishpat is monetary law. Eben Ezer is marriage law. Okay, Beit Yosef writes an encyclopedia of halacha built around the Torah, and then writes a summary of that called Shulchan Aruch. Rav Moshe Isserles writes a halachic, an Ashkenazi addendum to it, the Darkei Moshe, and then the Ramah, right? Then there's a series of important super commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, Magen Avraham, Taz, Shach, Rabbi Kveger, the Gra, and then in the 19th, 20th century, you have Mishnah Berurah, right? And then you have Arachat Shulchan written in parallel, right, as essays along Shulchan Aruch, fine. Now, what we're basically going to be doing, at least this month, is showing you how you basically follow a sugya, if you don't know how to learn it, from the books that I just mentioned. Okay? Because if you know nothing about a halacha, so a very good way to figure out the basics of a halacha is to find a siman in the Torah, and then, if you read the Beit Yosef, what's he going to do for you? He's going to give you the Gemara. He's going to give you the Kiri Shonim, right? You'll get a basic understanding of the sugya, right? And you'll be able to find the basic sources by looking it up using the Beit Yosef, okay? And then you can find at least a basic idea of how people paskin by following it through the dark, right? Beit Yosef and Darkei Moshe, Shulchan Aruch, Nosei Kelim, right? I mean, commentaries and, you know, Mishnah Berurah, Arachat Shulchan, if you want to get like 20th century. And then, of course, there are other works if you want very modern, Panini Halacha. Reb Elazar Malamud is in the process of writing a very, very easy to understand, right, day to day Halacha.
But, did the
Rosh write the Beit Yosef? Or Joseph Karo wrote the Beit Yosef.
The translator of Panini Halacha is also
English. Eli Fisher, Rabbi Eli Fisher.
He's consulting with Reb Malamud.
Yeah, of course.
To make the translation, which makes the translation into English of Panini Halacha a better translation than any translation of any older word.
No, it's a very good translation. He lives right here.
Yeah. But I'm saying is that because he's talking with Rav Malamed,
he can
translate directly from the thoughts of Rav Malamed.
He's a great guy in general. There were some guys last year who reached out to him and went over to his house. He lives in Buchman. So
that's really right. So if you want to get a basic grasp of halach issue in sort of Aruch Chaim type topics, so a very good way of going about it is to
basically take the tour, follow the sources that he quotes, right? Gemara basically shown him, and right, follow it, Shulchan Aruch, Nosek Kelim, and you'll have a basic thing, and that's what we're going to be doing, okay? With maybe some tshuva thrown in, right? Response to literature. Okay, we good? Basic picture of what we're talking about here? Okay. Now, what is the methodology of Rabbi Zakaro, of Moshe Israelis? Right? What are they doing? Right? We've talked about the books that they actually wrote. What are they doing? How do they decide halacha? Right? This is an important question because they don't have the same approach to halacha.
Do they not read through the Gemara and
show you
Achronim and
state off of that? Why would they think it's most logical? No. No? Everybody no. Like, no. So who does that? Rosh Shlomo Luria, right? The Maharshal does what you just said, which is, well, learn the sugya, figure out what makes the most sense. No, they do not do that. They do not do that. And that's why I gave you these three introductions, okay? So, you got this little thing I made, right? You can just look at the headings, okay? Psak, there are three major things you have to consider. Psak is halacha ruling, okay? Three factors that you need to really take into account, okay? One is independent analysis of canonical sources. It's a very fancy way of saying
you study, but
what?
The Torah.
Whatever the primary source is. Let's assume for the moment the Gemara, the Bavli, okay? That's going to be the primary source, okay? It's more complicated than that, right? Because there are things that are not discussed in Bavli. What's the role of Yerushalmi? What's the role of Midrash? What's the role of Agadata? Is Agadata the same status as other parts of the Gemara, right? All that's very complicated, but fundamentally, what does the sugya say? What do you think the sugya says, right? That's one branch of psak, okay? Second thing you've got to figure out is precedent. What have previous poskim said about this topic, right? Right? Because Avi learns the sugya, and he's convinced that the sugya means X, and then he discovers that, you know, every major posik of the last 1,000 years has said it means Y. So, b'mechilat kvod Avi, right, with all due respect, right, you probably have to take into account and say, well, if the entire world disagrees with me, yeah, holy oath, I'm not right. Could be, right? So the second factor that you have to introduce is precedent. What have previous poskim said? Yes? And the third thing is custom, right? What do people do? Okay, now each of these is, I'm oversimplifying, right? Because, like I said, what counts as a primary source, right, the canon? Is it only Bavli? Is it Bavli Yerushalmi? Is it Midrash? Halacha? Agada? What about Kabbalah? Right? Does Kabbalah? You say that is funny. I'm not joking at all. You'll see the Beit Yosef incorporates Zohar as a primary source. Right? This is not a joke. I mean this very seriously. Do you take Kabbalistic sources in for Halacha? That's a big question in Halacha. Right? These are very complicated questions. Precedent. Who counts and how do they count? Right? Is it everything that's ever been written? Everything you can find? Is it? Do you take a bunch of key poskim and try to figure out how they understood the sugya and ignore everybody else? Do you count numbers, right? And do rov? Do you figure out who's more important? These are not easy questions, but okay, you look at what previous... And then custom, what custom? The custom of my city, the custom of my country, the custom of my family, the custom of all of Klal Yisrael are different customs. Like I said, these are complicated questions, but fundamentally, poskim are playing with these factors, okay? And then they play with them, and they come up with, I would say psak, but not really, the most plausible psak they can come up with. Now, why do I say most plausible?
Because you can't be 100% sure.
So A, you can't be 100% sure, but it's not just you can't be 100% sure. It's that because, let's say, Mo learns the sugya, and he, by the time he finishes, he's convinced that he's 70% sure that it's usur, and 30% maybe it's mutter. So under normal circumstances, what is Mo going to do? Say it's usur,
yeah.
Right? But what if there are extenuating circumstances?
Because it's not 100% sure.
So because you're not 100% sure, that's when you start getting, right, pressure, right? What we call psikat halacha b'shalatcha, psak under extenuating circumstances. Right, where it becomes legitimate to rely on minority positions,
less likely positions, but positions that are still somewhat plausible, right? And there are all types of factors that can do that. Loss of money, right? Hafsid, kavod abriya, right? Human dignity, chilul Hashem, right? All types of different factors which can push you towards poskening by a less likely psak, okay? And of course, this is all complicated by the fact that in real life, you need to do this, you know, magic thing over here, which is apply. Apply is not easy, right? So, for example, if I say, okay, everyone agrees to the pretty much agrees to the following statement. If you have a vegetable that has bugs in it, that reaches the level of what we call muhzak bitola'im, right? It is assumed to have bugs, right? You have a lot of trouble, right? You can't really eat that. If it's a miut hamatsui, what is a miut hamatsui? Miut is minority, but matsui, which is found, meaning it's not that it never happens. It's not the majority of the time, but it's also not crazy. Right? So what's the halacha? Check. You have to check. You can eat it, but you have to check. And what if it's a miut she'eino matsui? Then you don't even need to check. Right? You don't need to check. That principle everyone agrees to. However, they don't agree on what counts as a miut hamatsui or miut she'eino matsui. Right? They don't count on the numbers, right? Or if there are numbers, right? And even if they did, there's another problem, which is you can set up all the principles in the world that you want. What do you need to figure out if you want to figure out whether you can have a vegetable without checking it? What are the numbers and how are you going to figure that out? Yeah, but what do you... It's very hard, meaning in theory it sounds easy, but what? Like, right, what if, right, like when I lived in Washington Heights, right, by YU, there were more bugs if I shopped on St. Nick, right, than if I shopped at Key Food. Because, you know, the stores on those blocks target different socioeconomic groups, right?
You can say the word.
Different socioeconomic groups. That's what it is. It's that on St. Nick, I could get asparagus for 33 cents, and I could go to Key Food, and it'd be $4 for a bunch, right? Like,
yeah, this price is no longer existing.
Fine, when I was there. Okay? So applying it, even if you have the principles, right, it's going to take a lot of research. Like, okay, vegetables, where, right, on this block, on this shipment, right? Like, application is hard. Okay. And assessing reality gets very complicated, and that's like an easy case. What if you get something more complicated, like a medical shiloh, right? Because then you got to figure out, well, which doctors do I ask, right?
And then there's human emotion in there as well. Which
yeah, right. So application... Right, so in real life psak, application is sometimes as hard as the theoretical, right? Actually just doing the research and trying to figure out how to assess the facts in front of you or the uncertain data, it could be just as hard as, right? But once you do all of that, you can get to a practical decision, okay? But which of these factors do you give more weight? Okay, and this is where we come to what I gave you, is the three introductions, okay? Beit Yosef, what is his primary, what drives him, right? What does he think is the most important factor to consider when you poskim?
Previous
poskim. Very good. Previous poskim. Precedent. For him, that is the most important thing. Why? Why is that the most important thing for him? Right, he has certain methodological assumptions. What are his assumptions about psak that drive him to care about precedent?
That they did a lot of the hard work already.
So they did a lot of the hard work, and
it can be really difficult.
So one is complexity, right? One is sheer complexity, right? And so the Beit Yosef, as he writes, part of his goal is to simplify the process, right? Is to collect everybody. So one thing is just it's hard. But why does he think that it matters? Who said, right, what previous poskim said? Why is he so intent on that? Good. So he seems to have some sort of, you read that Hadorot philosophy going on there, right? The generations have gotten less, and therefore he says, listen, if previous posts come up understood the sugya in a certain way, even if I have a question on it, it's probably a lack in me, not in them. Right? So what does he do? So first he collects all the Rishonim. Right? And then he claims, at least, under most circumstances, how does he come to a psak? With the majority of three. We're the big three. We talked about one, which is the Rush. The Rambam, right? Who's the Rambam. And the Riff, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. Right? Now, this is a bit biased, because about 90% of the time, the Rambam paskins like the Riff, because his father was Maimon, whose Rebbe was Rurimi Gash, or as the Temanim would have it, Rabbi Yosef Ibn Megaz, right? Whose Rebbe is the Riff, right? What?
So,
no, I just want you to know who you're talking about, right? This is important, right?
Grand Rebbe.
Correct.
Was the Riff.
Correct. Okay. But the Rambam sees himself, therefore, as a Talmud of that school. Okay, so that's really important, which means that Beit Yosef most of the time will paskin like the Riff, right? Well, because the Riff and the Rambam will often say the same thing. And when the Rambam goes out on a limb, right, then often the Rush will end up agreeing with the Riff, and then he'll paskin like the Riff, right? That's what's going to happen a lot. Okay, but fundamentally, the Beit Yosef is the most important of the factors is precedent. So let's read this a little bit inside, so that you believe me and understand this, okay? So that's what I give you. This is the Hakdama. He says, "V'im yomar adam b'chol din she'istarech lachkor shorsho u'motzo b'divrei Gemara mefarshim." If you tell me that what you should do in halacha is to look into the original source in the Gemara, v'mefarshim v'poskim kulam, and to look at all the commentaries, which is what Avi said, isn't that how you paskin, right? Isn't that what you should do? What does he say? Yichbad adavar alav me'od. Right. And you know what he says? For most people, even post him, that's hard. Too hard. I agree with you, but he doesn't agree with you. Right? He doesn't agree with you. He says that's too hard.
I agree that.
I understand. No, I understand. And you will, and we'll come back to that, because Rosh Shlomo Luria is going to agree with you. But I want you to understand what he's doing. This is what I want, right? That's why I said I needed to do introduction. I know it's long, but I want you to understand what, when you read Shulchan Aruch, I want you to understand what's going into it. This is what's going into it. He says it's too much. Kol shekein ki yileh limtzoa petach ladat makom adin b'tamud. He said, here's the problem. First of all, reading the Gemara, I read this right at the beginning. Right? Gemara Rishonim, too much. Second of all, before you get there, what do you need to do? You need to find it in the Gemara. Good luck. Right? Right? Good luck. Right? Without a code, where do you even look it up? Right? Meaning, you say learn the Sugya. First, where's the Sugya? How well do you know all 2,711 Blot of Shas? Right? And you'll tell me, oh, but a posseg would. Well, maybe he would. Maybe he wouldn't. Depends. Did he have a manuscript? Remember, the printing press is just made. Right? Books are really expensive.
An entire set of shots, like if you were to bring it to numbers now, when the printing press was created, all the shots would probably be equivalent to $10,000 or $20,000.
Yeah, it was a fortune. So he says, you have to find it. He said, look, we have the Magid Mishnah. Right? He said, you do have certain sources, like the Magid Mishnah's commentary and the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Yeruchim, who wrote some sort of proto-code, which will try to show you where things are in the Gemara. But if you read them, you will realize how much they're lacking. If you don't know all of Shas, and search as you will, you won't find everything there. It's not the way they work. They're not comprehensive works. Imagin Mishnah liyodadina. Who shall appear? Gesed Rambam's al shita. Though the Magid Mishnah is a commentary on the Rambam, so if it's not in the Rambam, or it's a shita that the Rambam disagrees with, you just won't find any evidence of it. Right? When you're reading the Magid Mishnah, it won't happen. Vim Yerubin Yerucham yodom mikatzele from imelavi kol adayon merav bedenahu. And the Rabbin Yerucham isn't comprehensive. Sometimes he just says a few. Or sometimes he'll only say part of it, and he won't discuss it all. You're going to look and you won't find it. And even if you find it in the Gemara, you'll have to look at the whole sugya. You have to look at all the commentaries and see if it's agreed upon. Right? This is a lot. Now, Avi says it's a lot for most people, but not for poskim. And Beis Yosef says, no, it's a lot for anybody. It's a lot for anybody. It's a lot. And he says it's more than that. V'zed davar mevor be'atzmo shehu din she'in lo kitzva. What does that mean? This is?
Clear.
It's clear that she'in lo kitzva. End. There's no end. This is endless. It's impossible. It's just impossible. There's only one person who could do it. Him. Thank you. Right? Him. Right? Very good. Very good. You knew where that was going. Right? Yes. Now, look, Magid, the Yosef Karo is a major, major posek. He does also, he is very confident in, very confident in his skills as a posek and his unique skills as a posek. He is very, very confident of it. Now, he not in this book, but why don't I read it for you, okay? He quotes the angel. At some point, he talked to the angel as Magid, and he says, "Well, what do they think of me, of my ability to paskin?" And he says, well, it's funny that you ask. Halo lecha leminda. You should just know. The kudsha brichu, that God himself, v'kol b'nei mitivta ila'a, mishadrin lach shlam, everyone in the yeshiva in heaven, say hello. Nevi'im ehemne, the Nevi'im, tanoi, amoroi, rabbanon savuroi, gaonim, paskanim, Kulu mevarchayatach. All the Tanaim, Amoraim, going to everyone, they all send you blessings. At asuk b'mileihon, you're involved in the words, umechevan yaton, and you, right, you understand it. Kama omin mizdamen lekol ni'imu, the world shakes, all the worlds shake at your voice. Danu birchan, shalin v'amren, my high mizdivta, and everyone is saying, why is the yeshiva in heaven shaking? V'amren, and they say, hi, because this person, Resh Mitivta, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabba the Eretz Israel, the greatest Rosh Yeshiva in all of Israel, Pasakna Rabba the Eretz Israel, the greatest Posek in all of Israel, Michabara Rabba the Eretz Israel, the greatest author in all of Israel, Yosef HaMichune Karo, right, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Melech Malchei Hamlachim Chafetz Bikaro, who punning on a pasuk in Esther, right? And Asher Melech Chafetz Bikaro, the one that the king will love. So the King of Kings loves him.
He has a high opinion of himself.
Kulu Mitivtin V'amrin, and they all say Brich Yehei Limare Alma, and they say so. May God be blessed. Etc. So he does have he is quite confident in his abilities to Paskin, because, you know, the angel told him that God himself considers him the greatest posek in all of Israel. That would give me confidence too. Yeah, even if I called myself third person, I would not say this about myself. I also do not have an angelic chavrusa, okay? And I'm not saying this because I'm humble. I literally do not have an angelic chavrusa. Shocking, I know, right?
The angels have
what?
Considering how many of that protecting a breath.
So anyway, so he says, the imbedin avaliyad, the imbedin avaliyad adam, Kach, b'mishrezeh sharshei kol nevaror yom, lakif divrei kolchim b'em chalkei divrei. He said, this is how hard it is to get even a halacha. What if you want to understand the background to a halacha and really get into it? It is impossible. Sha'afilu ye'ayein. B'chol din v'din v'divrei agumara v'farshim divrei kol ha'poskim sh'torach kodol. Even if you managed to go through the Herculean task of reading all the Gemara and all the Mefarshim on every single halacha. Hashichicha mitzuya ba'adam. There's something called forgetting, right? People forget. Umagam bedvarim rabe ha'istafut. Especially when it branches out into, right, you know, tangents. You'll end up working for no reason, God forbid. So maybe you'll say, you'll find some of the other sort of mini codes that were written. Okay? That's the short, long way. It seems short, but you'll never know anything. It's not going to work. Therefore, I wrote the Beit Yosef. Al kain ani hadal. I, the poor one.
So you can't be humble now.
Ba'alfei Yosef ben Moreno Ephraim ben Moreno Yosef Karo. Kineti Lashem Tzvakot. I was zealous for God. V'na'arti chaitznai l'sakel ha'misila. I sharpened my arrows to carve the path. V'iskamti, and I agreed, l'chaber sefer kolel to write in a comprehensive work that includes all practical law, from the sources in the Gemara, with every single position in the poskim, ish lo ne'edar. What is ish lo ne'edar? I left no one out. I wrote a comprehensive work of everything that has ever been written on every practical law. That is what he claims he has done in this book. That's not, yeah, it's not. Later on unless someone that had wanted to use it. Yes. V'lo ra'iti l'asot seves a chibur. I chose not to write this as an independent book. I didn't want to repeat what everyone says. I decided I would attach it to an earlier book. So he says maybe I would do it on the Rambam because, you know, he's the Rambam. And I said, the Rambam is very hard because the Rambam only brings his own shita, so I'd have to copy everybody else's. But what's the benefit of the tour? Is the tour brings many other shitot, right? Kolel rov dara poskim, right? The tour did some of the hard work for him, so he writes on the tour. Okay, next paragraph. So therefore, nimsa. So now, remember, I told you he's a precedent posik. So he says, if you read a halacha of Beit Yosef, what will you know? Only the following rishonim, nimsa. The one who has this book will know Divrei Talmud, the Gemara, Im, Perush Rashi, V'Tosfot, V'Haran, Piskei Arif, V'Harash, V'Mordechai, V'Rambam, V'Hagotav, U'Magid Mishnah, V'Remen Yerucham, V'Sefer HaTrumah, V'Shvul Eleket, V'Rokech, V'Sharei Dura, V'Sefer HaTashbeis, V'Sefer Eter, Nuke Yosef, Smag, V'Smak, Baruch Chaim, that's 20, Torah Abayit, Hagodah Shri, Sefer Hamanig, Ha'agur Sefer Balei Nefesh, La'arayvit, Shuvit HaRash, V'Arashba, V'Ari Bar Sheshet, V'Arav Bar Shimon Bar Tzemach, Marie Cologne, Shuman Adesha, and that's 31 different books. Kol Divrehem Mevorim Heitev, each of them analyzed. Uviktzat Mikomot, and sometimes Ma'amarei HaZohar, right? And the Zohar, sometimes. Okay?
Wait, but
he did. He said the Rambam. You missed it in the list. What? That's a good question, right? Because he seems to think that the Zohar is a source, but not as authoritative halachically as other things. Very good. That's exactly right.
I mean, would there be a point of going into any of those guys?
So that's why I said, if you want to know a sugi, you pick up the Beit Yosef and you'll get a basic view of these, right? That's exactly the point.
Did they actually list all 31 of them for everything?
No. No, they don't write in everything. But he says, V'lachein iskamti b'dat. Now, he says, so, but how does he weigh them? Remember, so we said he's a precedent posting. It's clear, right? He says, okay, how does he weigh them? So he says, look, He says all the Ashkenazim, the Rosh, what are they? Well, who are they really following? The Bali Atosvot. Right? They're all following the Bali Atosvot. So therefore, he says sometimes I don't write that. Right? I don't write Tosvot because I'm already quoting them. Next paragraph. He said, look, I just put 32 different mafarshim that I use. But how are you going to pasken? So he says, I'm not going to do that. What am I going to do? What's his methodology? I took the three pillars of Psak that the house relies on. And who are they? Halohema, Harif, this is called Fasi, Haram, Varash. I said, if two agree, nifsok, alach kmotam. Unless what? All the other authorities rule against them. Right? If they're really outliers, for some reason the Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh are all outliers. And the custom, therefore, is different. So now what does he tell you? What is, of the three factors, which is the most important factor for him? Right? Is precedent, which he, it, for him, is majority of the Rif, Rosh, and Rambam. That's his majority. However, he says sometimes he cares about other poskim. And what is another factor that comes in that shows when precedent, as he understands it, is not as smooth of a determining factor?
If everyone does something different.
Correct. Right? Minog for him can break that, can point to the fact that the Rif, the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam are in certain cases an outlier. Right? And then he'll rely on the other Rishonim, right, and explain the Minog, right? So if you want to figure out, right, so fundamentally, primarily, his main factor is precedent, specifically Rosh, Rif, and Rambam, even though he doesn't always do that. But okay, this is what he says, right? It's not quite as smooth as that, but fine. But he also cares enough about Minog and about other Shitot, which will sometimes act as a corrective.
So are there any halakhot that's not that either Rosh, Rambam, or...
If none of the three write about it, so then he looks at the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran and Mordechai and the Smag, and he finds someone who does it. And if no one writes about it, so I look at other poskim, right? Now, and elsewhere he says, now why doesn't he go back to the Sugyot? I didn't give you the whole thing, but why doesn't he go back to the Sugyo? Because the assumption is that he assumes that if there's a kasha, the Rambam thought of it and the Rosh thought of it, right? Like, he just assumes that they thought of it already. So if he has a kasha, but the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam agree that that's the halacha, even though he doesn't understand the Sugyo that way, he's going to, right, assume that they understood the Sugyo and there's something he's not getting. So he fundamentally goes with precedent. However, as we saw, the corrective is minhag, and therefore his last two lines, he says, "V'miktzat aratzot nagu isur miktzat varim afal pisha anu nachria behefech." He said, and if you're in a place where the minhag is different from us, but there is a strong minhag where you live, then what should you do? Yachziku b'minhagam ki kar kiblo aleim divrei chacham haoser, because that shows that you accepted the psak of the chacham who led to that position. And then you can't permit it based on the fact that I wrote that it's mutar. Okay? So if you look at the Beit Yosef, you will see that what drives him?
Precedent
with a corrective of minhag. Right?
Wouldn't that corrective minhag?
Meaning, right, he says, under normal circumstances, I go by precedent, which I define as the big three. If the minhag goes against it, because, and most of the other posts can go, then I will go that way. And if you live in a place with a strong minhag, right, then you don't follow me. Okay,
so
this
why,
is...
Why didn't you just say go by the minhag?
Oh, because that's not, right, for him, that's right, my point is, so that's what I said, these three factors, right, everyone, you see, he's clearly weighing them, right? But he gives the most weight to precedent, secondary weight to minhag, but sometimes minhag can really act as a corrective on the precedent, and in terms of understanding the sugya, he's minimally involved in poskening based on his own understanding of the sugya, right? But so his primary concern is what previous postmen have said. His secondary concern is custom. Yes?
But if customs is one thing and all three, Ramban, Rich, and...
So he says it doesn't matter because, right, if all three say that, but the Shari Dura said something else, he was, and your community follows the Shari Dura, so you follow the Shari Dura. Ah, you don't know the Shari Dura is, doesn't matter. Right? Correct. That's what he says. Right? But if you don't have a minhag, he said, barring the fact that you have a very defined minhag, right, then precedent is his fallback. Okay? Are you guys exhausted? Or should we save the next two for next time?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay? Then I will leave it. So here's what I want you to do, okay? We'll do one more day of introduction. Okay? So Thursday we'll do introduction. Right? Because Shmuel David would do whatever he does on Tuesday, Wednesday. Right? But Thursday we'll do this. What I want you to see is how does the Ramah view Psak? Because again, remember what I said. The Ramah agrees with the Beit Yosef in terms of codification, right? As a, but he doesn't weigh the factors in the same way. Right? And I want you to understand what the Ramah is doing. And then I want you to see the Yamshel Shlomo. And I want you to understand that in the 16th century, the Yamshel Shlomo basically lost out, right? Everyone for the next 200-300 years was writing codes, right? Or commentaries on codes. The idea that you should paskin from the sugya did not win. However, you have to understand that methodology stayed alive and was reinvigorated by well, who reinvigorated that methodology, right? The Gra, right? And the Olama Yeshivot that emerged from the Gra, Valajan and the like. And that's why if you look at certain modern poskim, including the Mishnah Brura and the Ber Halacha, where he'll analyze the Sugya, or the Aruch HaShulchan, who's coming, right? Who's coming from that tradition. Or Moshe Feinstein, or the Chazon Ish, right, you will see that there is a lot more emphasis on independent understanding of the sugya. Right? So if you want to understand, like, a Mishnah Brura or an Aruch HaShulchan, you have to realize all this background. Like, what are the factors? What are they taking into account? Opposed to Rav Avadya Yosef, how is he going to paskin? Like Rabbi Yosef Karo, right? He cares about precedent. And he views himself as fundamentally bound to Rabbi Yosef Karo and his methodology. So if Rabbi Yosef Karo said something, he paskins like it. If he didn't, then what does he do? He does his own research and counts up the numbers, right? He views himself as doing the same thing, right? But what I want you to do is see the Ramah, right, in the Dr. Moshe, the Yamshel Shlomo, to understand the two other models, right? That will bring us to the end of this week for us, and then Shmuel David will do a sugya with you tomorrow, and then I'll move to a sugya the next week, okay? Last point. Under most circumstances, I will not give you text this long because we will be learning halachic things, and what we'll basically do, I think, is an expanded Beit Yosef, right? As I want you to learn how to look up halacha, so I'll take a Beit Yosef, I'll go through it, and I will, right, meaning I'll do a little bit of the work for you. I will pull out the main Gemara, right? I'll pull out a few of the key Rishon in the Beit Yosef quotes. I'll give you a paragraph in Beit Yosef. I'll give you Shulchan Aruch. I'll give you one of the Nosei Kelim or two, maybe a modern tshuva, right? So that you can see, right, how you get a basic understanding of a sugya from the Gemara through the, right, through modern Psak, even if you didn't know it before, right? So we'll do basically some sort of expanded Beit Yosef, so that we get some basic halacha for the next few weeks. And, but again, I want you to keep an eye on methodology. Like, how do you look things up? How do you research? Okay? I know it's a lot of information, right? Obviously, you can keep look. You can ask me, but you can always just Google, like, when did this person live, right? Because it's important to know, right? It's important to know that Mishnah Brura did not live in the 16th century, right? And therefore, he has a lot more influences in the Magen Avraham, right? He's in a different world. Like, that type of thing is important if you want to contextualize things. Yeah.
The Shulchan Aruch is just a summary of what he wrote in the Beit Yosef?
Yes. Okay. Usually. It's like a handbook, right? Sometimes he does Paskin differently than he does in Beit Yosef, which gets confusing.
Is Shulchan Aruch less comprehensive than the...
No. I mean, yes and no, right? Meaning... Fundamentally, it's supposed to cover everything in Beit Yosef. There are things that don't make it in, but fundamentally, it's written on every siman. It's the bottom line. Shulchan Aruch is the bottom line. Beit Yosef is the encyclopedia meant for poskim.
Okay.
Right? And the Shulchan Aruch is meant to be the bottom line for Balabatim, right? Essentially, or less.
Nowadays, if someone needs to poskim something new, do they go to the Gemara? Do they go to the Beit Yosef? Where are they looking in order to poskim something new?
That is a very good question, and the answer is it depends. Depends what type of posik you are, right? If you're a posik like Moshe Feinstein, who is more inclined to look at Sugyo because he's coming from the world of the Yeshivot, right? Then the answer is, you read a Tshuva Negus Moshe, often he'll just go straight to the Gemara. If you read Rav Avadia Yosef, he will try to figure it out based on 10,000 sources.
Right? I mean, and Rav Avadia Yosef is like getting, you know, Rav Avadia is getting, the information from people who
got their information from the Gemara.
Yeah.
So it does all go back to the Gemara.
Yeah, of course, but he's not independently analyzing it. Just because it goes back to the Gemara, that doesn't mean that you, as a live option, are going back to the Gemara to figure out what you think the Sugya means. Just because it's going back to the Gemara doesn't mean that's practically how you're engaging with it.
So, in the Eastern right? world today, is our focus more independent learning, or is it more...
our?
As in...
It depends who you ask.
As in, like, say even Migdal, like Eon track.
So Eon's different, but in Psak, depends who you ask. And that's what we're going to talk about. And I'm not going to impose my view on you right now. I want you to understand models. I want you to understand, right? I'm not imposing it on you yet. Forever. Okay?